Go ahead. As per APA strict, APHA strict regulations here, I work for the federal government, so I have nothing to declare, right? Nobody gives me money to say any of this outside of a regular paycheck. All right, so what I'm going to give you two guys today is a little bit of background on partner notification, how it would lead into expedited partner therapy, which is a version of patient-driven referral, and then a little bit of focus on some of the legal aspects seeing as of the questions that have arisen over the past decade after the question of will my patients sort of die, is if they survive, will someone sue me on it, right? And that's it, that seems to drive a lot of the answers are no and no, but we can make it a little bit longer. Okay, there you go, no relationships to disclose. And if I say something I shouldn't, my employer would like to disassociate themselves. That's probably a good idea on it. On the bottom of each of these slides is the website that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention maintains for expedited partner therapy. So just in case it's a little squinty to see, it's on every slide, don't worry. cdc.gov/STD takes you to the main STD site for the Division of STD Prevention, and then EPT will take you into expedited partner therapy. All right, so the background. Here are your basic principles for partner notification. Right? The common goals across all the diseases are to treat existing disease and interrupt future transmission. So that's how you're looking from a public health perspective to control diseases, to prevent people from passing it on, therefore breaking the chains of transmission, therefore letting the disease die down. But for different diseases, we have tailored tactics, different approaches, different emphases, although, of course, the final goal at the end is reduced disease. In partner notification, this is the very most general sort of point that we make for this. You're looking to partner services, is what we refer to here. You're looking for candidates. You have to go out and seek them. With public health, that might take you from, say, surveillance data for gonorrhea cases or syphilis, people who walk through the clinic, and those are the people who you would be contacting, traditionally interviewing, counseling them, and referral activities, the actual notification, the process here of getting to notify partners of their exposure, thus leading to treatment either of infected cases or prophylactic preventive treatment. And other services is appropriate for those partners. A lot of people, sexually transmitted diseases by and large are correlated with all sorts of needs. And if you have a program that could do referral to things like mental health services, then you're adding on some extra benefit. Now, PH here stands for public health. You have relatively few cases of syphilis, which is where this all gets started. Maybe somewhere between 15,000 and 25,000 cases if you're throwing in certain early latent cases. That would be eligible for interviews and follow-up, so on and so forth. But we had 1 million cases of chlamydia reported last year, so we're not looking to do something like add a few public health staff here and there or go back to where we were a decade ago. To use the same methods would require something on the lines of between 1 and 2 orders of magnitude, so 10 to 100 times more staff. So obviously we start looking for something else. I kind of already referred you to provider referral. If you have public health involvement, this is where a professional, disease intervention specialist, talks to partners, contacts, notifies partners. You don't need public health people to do nothing, which is not uncommon. A lot of these diseases are diagnosed outside of public settings and outside that kind of infrastructure. But also frequent is some kind of self-referral instruction. Right? You ask the patient. You're outside of public health. The provider, physician, physician's assistant, nurse, practitioner, etc., can't do this. So they say, will you do it, please? Okay. And sometimes you get a contract. You give the patient, gets a certain amount of time to do this, and a professional will do it if not. So this is where expedited partner therapy comes into the mix. All right, the key is the provision of therapy before the clinical evaluation. To do the rationale is prophylaxis, preventive treatment. You're treating people on the basis of exposure, which you would be doing if they walked into your clinic. Other conditions, you need an effective medication. You can use medications or you can use prescriptions. You need an effective and safe medication, right? This is not the sort of thing. You're not doing directly observed therapy here. So you need a kind of medication that has a very, very low allergy rate, as well as a high cure rate. That would be perfect. The medium, the person who could expedite this, index patients, and that's generally called patient-delivered partner therapy, and that's pretty much what we use as a reference here. So if somebody's talking about EPT, if they don't specify another group of people, you'll be safe assuming the patients are the medium. But public health professionals, disease intervention specialists could do this, and pharmacists even. If you disperse prescriptions and the person takes them in, then the pharmacist is a point of contact in the healthcare system as well. All right. So match the two together. If the basic strategy is self-referral, patient referral, the EPT addition to this, the medications or the prescriptions, would be patient-delivered partner therapy. If you are working a provider referral setting, in the public health staff, disease DIS, that's what we generally call field-delivered therapy. That's been tried out quite a bit north of here in San Francisco, and they increased their treatment rates for gonorrhea substantially from about the low 60s to the mid 80s percentage of partners treated by having DIS carry medications out in the field for partners of persons with gonorrhea. Okay, why? I think we've already alluded to this. The standard of care is self-referral, asking the patients to do it, does not typically capture all partners. All right, systematic reviews, meta-analysis suggest that if you can get a professional to do this, it's more effective than asking the patient to do it. It should not come as a surprise. The professional has a training, and the professional has no particular vested interest in concealing infection, and they are quite good at doing this. However, as we've also already alluded to, morbidity is much too high for universal DIS-assisted referral. Of those syphilis cases that are eligible, one study found about 90% of those received the interview and very likely the follow-up, but we were down to 17% for gonorrhea and 12% for chlamydial infection, so this is not, okay? DIS referral, a provider referral, is really not a feasible method for gonorrhea and chlamydia control in many areas of the country. You will find places that do pretty decent routine gonorrhea control using public health staff. If they don't have much syphilis, if they're not attending to HIV, or they don't have much HIV and they have all that under control, it can be managed. Those people with gonorrhea are perfectly suitable candidates. There's just too many of them. Do providers, physicians do this? EPT back this time in it? Oh my, yes, all right? They don't generally wait for us. Variety of surveys, local and one big national sample, that was a random sample of AMA, people in the AMA master file, which means people who entered medical school, finds that pretty much across the country with minimal variation, about half of the respondents, and you get this across surveys at the local level as well, about half the respondents say, yes, I've given medications or prescriptions to patients to give to their partners at least once or twice, and a smaller proportion do this on a routine basis. So that's actually, in the absence of any regulation, it's widespread practice. Okay. These are trial data that CDC collected or participated in. This was a study from the mid-90s. The outcome was chlamydia. Blue here are the people refers to PDPT. So, and this is a reduction in reinfection. And so you've got about 20%, these are the odds ratios of the relative risks. So you've got about a 20% reduction in reinfection here, 25% here. These are both either chlamydia or chlamydia-driven. This was gonorrhea and chlamydia, but most people had chlamydia. Here is a gonorrhea-driven, urethritis is what they were enrolled on, but you can see a much larger effect size. This is trichomoniasis with female patients. I mean, that's going to be reflected in the guidance. Not a significant difference, but important that for the first time, more people in the PDPT arm wound up with reinfection. It's a meta-analysis conducted by a group in Switzerland that shows the same data. These are the same trials. The extra one here, Anna, this is the one I was referring to before. This is a trial in which the providers were randomized to discuss this with their patients. The outcome is still chlamydia, and you can see the numbers have run pretty small, but the effect size is actually fairly substantial. And that's something to think about. When providers in clinical settings discuss this with patients, right, what you're doing here is replicating program operations better than if you are randomizing patients and people are going to do something or they're not going to do something. It tends to depress the effect size, right? Because you get a few people who don't want to do this randomized into a given arm, or who do want to do this who are randomized into the control arm. Similarly, partners treat a poorly listed patient, a poorly listed partner, no, that's right, it's just a mouthful on it. Same sets of trials. The Nuaha one that sits up on the top there was conducted in Uganda, and you can see that almost always people say in all the trials that there are more partners treated this way. That's one of the keys, right, because preventive treatment, prophylaxis, is a driver of future incidents. Led to our guidance. Those are the websites for it. Heterosexual males and females, gonorrhea and chlamydial infection, please accompany with written instructions and we can find some for you. And those are reasonable candidates. Men who have sex with men, fewer data, possibly higher comorbidity with HIV, which means they would benefit more from coming into the clinic, and you don't want to get in the way of that. Trichomoniasis and syphilis, much more caution or for various reasons, should be a last resort. Okay, last part here would be the legality issues for under the general considerations. There are plenty. Can you contact partners and get some feedback? What conditions? How do you organize this in a healthcare system? But one of the big questions that comes up is legality always. Those problems, issues of legality, fall under generally what do you do to prescribe, what does a pharmacist do to dispense, and what constitutes a patient relationship. This review is complete. It's on the website down in here. These are the areas that we search. Statutes, regulations, judicial decisions. Those don't have to pertain directly to patient-delivered partner therapy, but you might get something, a court case on a doctor who gave some kind of medications without an examination of the patient that would bear upon this. Administrative opinions, what does the Attorney General have to say about this? In Washington State, that's relevant. Medical and pharmacy boards in New Mexico were the approving mechanism there. Anything in the pipeline? Incorporation via reference. Some states, in their public health law, incorporate CDC treatment guidelines or other guidelines as per production. So if we say something, then it is incorporated by reference into a state law, by their choice, obviously. And prescription requirements. Here's how it looks more or less at the time of writing. Okay, you are here. You've got a long way to go before you're out of the green on it. Take a quick look. What the green means is that it is permissible. There is no, that doesn't mean that there's always program acting interest. That'll be the last point for it. But it means that there is a permissive legal environment. There is no impediment that we saw. And let me emphasize, all this is a starting point for people who are interested in this. It's not an ending point. This is not legal advice. This is the results of a review that will tell you something about the legal landscape in your area on it. These are examples of states that have specific material somewhere that would indicate a prohibition, and that there are also quite a few sort of gray areas. And it probably would require some clarification. By the way, this is not correlated with physician practice whatsoever. And we've had people stand up from the state of Illinois and say, I do this and I do, you know, pretty much, I don't really care what you have to say about it. And then you've got people who are a little leery, still at times, in states that are green. Just some examples. These are really, so if you access the slides later, you've got some material here. Here's a statute from California. That's probably a really bad idea if I clicked on that. I don't know. EPT authorized for these diseases. It was originally just chlamydia, and they added in gonorrhea on it. Here's a prohibition one from Oklahoma. Can't prescribe to a patient without sufficient examination. Okay, not aimed at PDPT or EPT in generally, but something that would certainly apply. Judicial decisions, certainly not EPT, but somebody got into trouble. Oklahoma again. Here's what a board would say, has said in Colorado, a medical board. Incorporation via reference. Okay, this is Nevada. Here are the different things, the CDC, STD treatment guidelines. Okay, those have an endorsement of EPT in them, ergo that endorsement is incorporated by reference in Nevada. Same map, just so we can make one point on it. Sometimes you come to places and they may have that environment and they still don't want to do it. Or you could be in a place that is interested but does not really interested in going a legal route to clarify this, and so you get something that doesn't necessarily make it onto our map, although the Asher has a different kind. And the last example from that, Texas, right? Gray area for us. By the way, on the actual website, you can click on any of these states and it will give you the spreadsheet that has the information that we found for it. But they issued this letter. This is almost a copy, or this is similar to a copy of one we issued in 2005, as a matter of fact, on May 5th, 2005, when the trial data were complete. And this is the Commissioner of Health for the state of Texas. Now, it's not clear that he can change the law with his endorsement. If he's in another state, maybe he does have that authority. But if I were a physician there, I'd feel pretty comfortable with that letter as far as establishing community standard of care. But that's me. Okay. Soon, at the end of this week, the next MMWR is embargoed, so I probably shouldn't even show you the title, but there you go. On it, recommendations for partner services programs that incorporate integrated guidance for, guidance recommendations for HIV and the other diseases named on there, or based on the common principles, and that has some more work about EPT as well. That gets incorporated by reference, and you've got the more specific guidelines. That's me, and that's it. All right.